This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Big Pharma moves to inject some fairness and compassion into drug trials. From APM in New York, I'm Matt Nesta with the Marketplace Midday Update. One of the world's biggest drug companies has moved to outsource the process of deciding who is allowed into its experimental drug trials. Johnson & Johnson is setting up what's called a compassionate use panel to help it make these life and death decisions. Dr. Arthur Kaplan will head the new panel. He's also a bioethicist at New York University. Dr. Kaplan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Clearly, taking any unapproved drug involves risk. How do you go about making an ethical decision, which is often a personal matter of life and death?
If we had a common pathway where everybody had to come through and we anonymized people so that there wouldn't be any attempt to peddle influence, so to speak, you'd have a much fairer playing field. And then if you had a committee that had broader perspective, patient advocacy perspectives, ethics perspectives, you'd get a richer response to these tough, tough decisions than just leaving it up to a corporate executive.
Well, that probably answers the second question, which is why is J&J outsourcing this? And do you think this is going to be the new industry model?
Well, they came and asked, you know, what I thought, and the model I told you about with a panel that would review requests, that had a lot of appeal to them. I think they're sincere in trying to figure out a better way to do this. We're going to start with a drug that actually is pretty far along in clinical trials, so I think the safety issues won't be as serious as they would be for brand new agents that people might want. And it could become a way to approach this. You'll remember we had a lot of discussion about when to try experimental Ebola drugs. In the middle of that epidemic, decisions had to be made about who was going to get scarce medicines. So agencies, government, they too need a model.
Dr. Kaplan, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Staying on the drug beat here, when Alexion announced it was buying Syngiva for $8.4 billion earlier this week, chances are it involved a business that you know little about. It's the creation of so-called orphan drugs that treat rare genetic diseases. Gigi Duban takes a closer look.
The thing about rare diseases is that they're, well, rare. And if you're in the business of making drugs, you need people to sell them to. Even though the pool of people needing these treatments is smaller, the payoff is huge if you're a rare disease drug company, says Adam Feuerstein. He's senior columnist covering biotech at The Street.
When you're charging, you know, $500,000 a year, you know, that adds up.
That's per patient. He says that's the main reason we're seeing all these mergers and acquisitions lately in biopharma.
There are just relatively few drugs being developed that can generate, you know, hundreds of millions and billions of dollars in sales.
Pete Mooney tracks the biotech industry for Deloitte. He says also governments have made this market lucrative, and they've removed lots of the roadblocks regular pharmaceutical companies face. So drugs get to market faster and help people in need.
So it does a very strong social good as well.
But Mooney says, as always, companies have to balance the cost of developing these treatments with how affordable they'll be for patients. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
It's election day in the UK today, and of all the issues on the table there, inequality has been a key theme of the campaign. In particular, one plan to close a tax loophole called the non-domiciled rule. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
A question from the Labour Party leader, Ed Miliband.
Why should people be able to enjoy all of the virtues of our great country and not pay tax like everyone else?
Why are more than 100,000 wealthy people living in Britain classed as non-domiciled or non-dom and not required to pay tax on money they earn abroad?
It isn't just. The next Labour government will abolish the non-dom rule.
Miliband's pledge is proving popular with the public and has even struck a chord with some conservative politicians. Here's one of them, Richard Bacon, in a parliamentary committee hearing into the issue.
You're surprised that people think there's one set of rules for the rich people and one set of rules for someone else, when you've just told us that that's exactly what there is. No wonder people are pissed off.
But the non-doms have their defenders. In this upmarket cafe in Mayfair, one of the most affluent parts of London, I met Russian property specialist Roman Grigoriev. He deplores the Labour plan. Many of his clients are Russian non-doms who spend millions in the British capital.
You know, OK, that's good for a few London fat cats. It's good for you, Roman. But what good is it for the rest of Britain?
But what good it is to make London poor. So you don't get the country richer by restricting London from becoming richer.
He says if the non-dom status is scrapped, it could drive thousands of wealthy foreigners out of the UK. Treasury Minister Priti Patel agrees.
These non-doms will just probably leave the country as well. There is no evidence that this will bring in substantial sums of money whatsoever.
And it could cost the Treasury. The non-doms pay tax on their UK earnings, some $12 billion a year. Ken Clark, a former Conservative finance chief, also deplores the Labour plan.
You not only will lose revenue for the Treasury, but you will also possibly damage the economy. Some people come here to live for a few years to invest in a business.
But Labour says it must uphold a vital principle of fairness and equality in taxation, whatever the cost. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
And finally, it's been said that cash is king. But in Denmark, cash could soon be a thing of the past, at least for that country's restaurants and gas stations and retailers. The government's proposed cash ban is supposed to help boost business and the economy by freeing up the time and expense involved in such tedious pursuits like accounting for and guarding cash, as well as making change. The initiative is widely supported by the Danish public, which already has one of the world's highest rates of cashless commerce. In New York, I'm Matt Nesto with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.